Chapter 8. Jara. Gray stone houses with slate roofs lay clustered along the few narrow streets of Jara, clinging to a hillside above a little stream spanned by a low wooden bridge. The muddy streets were empty, and so was the sloping village green, except for one man sweeping the steps of the village's only inn, standing beside its stone stable, but it looked as if there had been a good many people on the green not long before. Half a dozen arches woven of green branches and dotted with such few flowers as could be found this early in the year stood in a circle in the middle of the grass. The ground had a trampled look, and there were other signs of a gathering. A woman's red scarf lying tangled at the foot of one of the arches, a child's knitted cap, a pewter pitcher tumbled on its side, a few half-eaten scraps of food. The aromas of sweet wine and spiced cakes clung about the green, mixed in with smoke from dozens of chimneys and evening meals cooking. For an instant, Perrin's nose caught another odor, one he could not identify, a faint trail that raised the hair on the back of his neck with its vileness. Then it was gone. But he was sure something had passed that way, something wrong. He scrubbed at his nose as if to rub away the memory of it. That can't be Rand. Light, even if he has gone mad, that can't be him, can it? A painted sign hung above the inn door, a man standing on one foot with his arms thrown in the air. Harlan's Leap. As they drew rein in front of the square stone building, the sweeper straightened, yawning fiercely. He gave a start at Perrin's eyes, but his own already protruding eyes went wide when they fell on Loyal. With his wide mouth and no chin to speak of, he looked something like a frog. There was an old smell of sour wine about him, to Perrin at least. The fellow had certainly been part of the celebration. The man gave himself a shake and turned it into a bow with one hand resting on the double row of wooden buttons running down his coat. His eyes flickered from one to another of them, popping even more every time they rested on Loyal.
"Welcome, good mistress, and the light illumine your way. Welcome, good masters. You wish food, rooms, baths? All to be had here at the Leap. Master Herod, the innkeeper, keeps a good house. I am called Simeon. If you wish anything, ask for Simeon, and he will get it for you."
He yawned again, covering his mouth in embarrassment and bowing to hide it.
"I beg your pardon, good mistress. You have come far. Have you word of the great hunt? The hunt for the Horn of Valir? Or the false dragon? It's said there's a false dragon in Tarabon. Or maybe Arad-Daman."
"We have not come that far," Lan said, swinging down from his saddle. "No doubt you know more than I." They all began dismounting.
"You have had a wedding here?" Moraine said.
"A wedding, good mistress? Why, we've had a lifetime of weddings, a plague of them, all in the last 2 days. There isn't a woman old enough to speak the betrothal remains unmarried, not in the whole village, not for a mile in any direction. Why, even Widow Jorath dragged old Bonas through the arches, and they'd both sworn they'd never marry again. It was like a whirlwind just snatched everybody up. Rilith, the weaver's daughter, she started it, asking John the blacksmith to marry her, and him old enough to be her father and more. The old fool just took off his apron and said yes, and she demanded the arches be put up right then and there. Wouldn't hear of a proper wait, and all the other women sided with her. Since then, we've had marriages day and night. Why, nobody's had any sleep at all, hardly."
"That's very interesting," Perrin said when Simeon paused to yawn again. "But have you seen a young—"
"It is very interesting," Moraine said, cutting him off. "And I would like to hear more of it later, perhaps. For now, we would like rooms and a meal."
Lan made a small gesture toward Perrin, down low, as if telling him to hold his tongue.
"Of course, good mistress. A meal, rooms."
Simeon hesitated, eyeing Loyal.
"We'll have to push two beds together for—"
He leaned closer to Moraine and dropped his voice.
"Pardon, good mistress, but what exactly is he? Meaning no disrespect,"
he added hastily. He had not spoken softly enough, for Loyal's ears twitched irritably.
"I am an ogre. What did you think I was, a trollic?"
Simeon took a step back at the booming voice.
"Trollic, good master. Why, I'm a grown man. I don't believe in children's tales. Did you say ogre? Why, ogre are I mean, that is...
In desperation, he turned to bellow toward the stable next to the inn.
Nico! Patrim! Visitors! Come see to their horses!
After a moment, two boys with hay in their hair tumbled out of the stable, yawning and rubbing their eyes. Simeon gestured to the steps, bowing as the boys gathered reins. Perrin slung his saddlebags and blanket roll over his shoulder and carried his bow as he followed Moraine and Lan inside, with Simeon bowing and bobbing ahead of them. Loyal had to duck low under the lintel, and the ceiling inside only cleared his head by a foot. He kept rumbling to himself about not understanding why so few humans remembered the Ogier. His voice was like distant thunder. Even Perrin, right in front of him, could only understand half of his words. The inn smelled of ale and wine, cheese and weariness, and the aroma of roasting mutton drifted from somewhere in the back. The few men in the common room sagged over their mugs as if they would really like to lie down on the benches and go to sleep. One plump serving woman was drawing a mug of ale from one of the barrels at the end of the room. The innkeeper himself, in a long white apron, sat on a tall stool in the corner, leaning against the wall. As the newcomers entered, he lifted his head, bleary-eyed. His jaw dropped at the sight of Loyal.
"Visitors, Master Herod," Simeon announced. "They want rooms." "Master Herod?" "He's an Ogier, Master Herod."
The serving woman turned and saw Loyal and dropped the mug with a clatter. None of the weary men at the tables even looked up. One had put his head down on the table and was snoring. Loyal's ears twitched violently. Master Herod got to his feet slowly, eyes fastened on Loyal, smoothing his apron all the while.
"At least he is in a white cloak,"
he said at last, then gave a start as if surprised he had spoken aloud.
"That is to say, welcome, good mistress, good masters. Forgive my lack of manners, I can only plead tiredness, good mistress."
He darted another glance at Loyal and mouthed, "Ogier," with a look of disbelief. Loyal opened his mouth, but Moraine forestalled him.
"As your man said, good innkeeper, I wish rooms for my party for the night and a meal."
"Oh, of course, good mistress, of course. Simeon, show these good people to my best rooms, so they can put down their belongings. I'll have a fine meal laid out for you when you return, good mistress. A fine meal."
"If it pleases you to follow me, good mistress," Simeon said. "Good masters."
He bowed the way to stairs at one side of the common room. Behind them, one of the men at the tables suddenly exclaimed,
"What in the name of the light is that?"
Master Herod began explaining about Ogier, making it sound as if he were quite familiar with them. Most of what Perrin heard before they left the voices behind was wrong. Loyal's ears twitched without stop. On the second floor, the Ogier's head came near to brushing along the ceiling. The narrow corridor was growing dark, with only the sharp light of sunset through a window next to the door at the far end.
"The candles in the rooms, good mistress," Simeon said. "I should have brought a lamp, but my head is still spinning from all those weddings. I'll send someone up to light the fire, if you wish. And you'll want wash water, of course."
He pushed open a door.
"Our best room, good mistress. We don't have many, not many strangers, you see, but this is our best."
"I'll take the one next to it," Lan said. He had Moraine's blanket roll and saddlebags on his shoulder, as well as his own, and the bundle containing the dragon banner, too.
"Oh, good master, that's not a very good room at all. Narrow bed, cramped, meant for a servant, I suspect. As if we'd ever have anybody here who had a servant. Begging your pardon, good mistress."
"I will take it anyway," Lan said firmly.
"Simeon," Moraine said, "does Master Herod dislike the Children of the Light?"
"Well, he does, good mistress. He didn't, but he does. It isn't good policy disliking the children, not so close to the border as we are. They come through Jara all the time, like there wasn't any border at all. But there was trouble yesterday, a fistful of trouble. And with the weddings going on and all..."
"What happened, Simeon?"
The man looked at her sharply before answering. Perrin did not think anyone else saw how sharply in the dimness.
"There was about 20 of them come day before yesterday. No trouble then. But yesterday... Why, 3 of them up and announced they weren't Children of the Light anymore. They took off their cloaks and just rode away."
Lan grunted. "White cloaks swear for life. What did their commander do?"
"Why,
He must have done something, you can be sure, good master. But another of them announced he was off to find the Horn of Elir. Anyway, still another said they would be hunting the dragon. That one said he was going to Almuth Plain when he left. Then some of them started saying things to women in the streets, things they shouldn't have, and grabbing at them. The women were screaming and children yelling at the ones bothering the women. I never saw such commotion.
Didn't any of you try to stop them? Perrin said.
Good master, you carry that axe like you know how to use it, but it isn't so easy to face up to men with swords and armor and all, when all you know how to use is a broom or a hoe. The rest of the white cloaks, those as hadn't gone off, put an end to it. Almost came to drawn swords, and that wasn't the worst. Two more just went mad, if the others weren't. Those two started raving that Jara was full of dark friends. They tried to burn the village down, said they would, beginning with the leap. You could see the burn marks out back, where they got it started. Fought the other white cloaks when they tried to stop them. The white cloaks that were left, they helped us put it out, tied those two up tight and rode out of here, back toward Amadicia. Good riddance, I say. And if they never come back, it'll be too soon.
Rough behavior, Lance said, even for white cloaks. Simeon bobbed his head in agreement.
As you see, good master. They never acted like that before. Swagger around, yes. Look at you like you were dirt, and poke their noses in where they hadn't any business. But they never caused trouble before. Not like that, anyway.
They are gone now, Moraine said, and troubles with them. I am sure we will pass a quiet night.
Perrin kept his mouth shut, but he was not quiet inside.
All these weddings and white cloaks are all very well, but I'd sooner know if Rand stopped here, and which way he went when he left. That smell couldn't have been him.
He let Simeon guide him on down the hall to another room, with two beds and a washstand, a pair of stools, and not much else. Loyal stooped to put his head through the doorway. Only a little light came in by the narrow windows. The beds were big enough, with blankets and comforters folded at the foot, but the mattresses looked lumpy. Simeon fumbled on the mantle above the fireplace until he found a candle and a tinderbox to get it alight.
I'll see about getting some beds put together for you, good, Ogier. Yes, just a moment now.
He showed no sign of hurry to be about it, though, fussing with the candlestick as if he had to place it just right. Perrin thought he looked uneasy.
Well, I'd be more than uneasy if white cloaks had been acting like that in Emmons Field.
Simeon, has another stranger passed through here in the last day or two? A young man, tall, with gray eyes and reddish hair. He might have played the flute for a meal or a bed.
I remember him, good master,
Simeon said, still shifting the candlestick.
Came yesterday morning early. Looked hungry, he did. He played the flute for all the weddings yesterday. Good-looking fellow. Some of the women eyed him at first, but...
He paused, looking at Perrin sideways.
Is he a friend of yours, good master?
I know him, Perrin said.
Why?
Simeon hesitated.
No reason, good master. He was an odd fellow, that's all. He talked to himself sometimes, and sometimes he laughed when nobody had said anything. Slept in this very room last night, or part of it. Woke us all in the middle of the night yelling. It was just a nightmare, but he wouldn't stay any longer. Master Herod didn't make much effort to talk him into it, after all that noise.
Simeon paused again.
He said something strange when he left.
What? Perrin demanded.
He said somebody was after him. He said...
The chinless man swallowed and went on more slowly.
Said they'd kill him if he didn't go. One of us has to die, and I mean it to be him. His very words.
He did not mean us,
Loyal rumbled.
We are his friends.
Of course, good Ogier. Of course he didn't mean you. I don't mean to say anything about a friend of yours, but I think he's sick. In the head, you know.
We will take care of him, Perrin said. That's why we're following him. Which way did he go?
I knew it,
Simeon said, bouncing on his toes.
I knew she could help as soon as I saw you. Which way? East, good master.
East, like the Dark One himself, was on his heels. Do you think she'll help me? Help my brother, that is. Gnome's bad sick, and Mother Rune says she can't do anything.
Perrin kept his face expressionless and bought a little time to think by propping his bow in the corner and setting his blanket roll and saddlebags on one of the beds. The problem was that thinking did not help much. He looked at Loyal, but found no help there. Consternation had the Ogier's ears drooping and his long eyebrows hanging down on his cheeks. What makes you think she can help your brother?
Stupid question. The right question is, what does he mean to do about it?
Why, I traveled to Johanna once, good master, and I saw two women like her. I couldn't mistake her after that.
His voice dropped to a whisper.
It said, they can raise the dead, good master.
Who else knows this? Perrin asked sharply, and at the same time Loyal said,
if your brother is dead, there is nothing anyone can do.
The frog-faced man looked from one to the other of them anxiously, and his words came in a babble.
No one knows but me, good master. Gnome isn't dead, good Ogier, only sick. I swear nobody else could recognize her. Even Master Herod's never been more than 20 miles from here in his life. He's so bad sick. I'd ask her myself, only my knees would be shaking so hard she couldn't hear me talk. What if she took offense and called down lightning on me? And what if I'd been wrong? It isn't the kind of thing you accuse a woman of without...
He raised his hands, half in pleading, half as if to defend himself.
I can make no promises, Perrin said, but I'll speak to her.
Loyal, why don't you keep Simeon company till I've spoken to Moraine?
Of course,
the Ogier boomed. Simeon gave a start when Loyal's hand swallowed his shoulder.
He will show me my room and we will talk. Tell me, Simeon, what do you know of trees?
Trees, good Ogier?
Perrin did not wait any longer. He hurried back down the dark hall and knocked on Moraine's door, barely waiting for her peremptory, come, before pushing in. Half a dozen candles showed that the Leap's best room was none too good, though the one bed had four tall posts supporting a canopy, and the mattress looked less full of lumps than Perrin's. There was a scrap of carpet on the floor and two cushioned chairs instead of stools. Other than that, it looked no different from his room. Moraine and Lan stood in front of the cold hearth as if they had been discussing something, and the Aes Sedai did not look pleased at being interrupted. The warder's face was as imperturbable as a carving.
Rand's been here all right, Perrin started off. That fellow Simeon remembers him.
Moraine hissed through her teeth.
You were told to keep your mouth shut, Lan growled.
Perrin squared his feet to face the warder. That was easier than facing Moraine's glare.
How could we find out whether he had been here without asking questions? Tell me that.
He left last night, if you are interested, heading east, and he was carrying on about somebody following him trying to kill him.
East?
Moraine nodded. The utter calm of her voice was at odds with her disapproving eyes.
That is good to know, though it had to be so if he is going to Tyr. But I was fairly certain he had been here even before I heard about the White Cloaks, and they made it a certainty.
Rand is almost surely right about one thing, Perrin. I cannot believe we are the only ones trying to find him. And if they find out about us, they may well try to stop us. We have enough to contend with trying to catch up to Rand without that. You must learn to hold your tongue until I tell you to speak.
The White Cloaks? Perrin said incredulously. Hold my tongue? Burn me if I will.
How could they tell you Rand's madness? Is it catching?
Not his madness, Moraine said, if he is far enough gone yet to be called mad. Perrin, he is more strongly Tavirin than anyone since the Age of Legends. Yesterday in this village, the pattern moved, shaped itself around him like clay shaped on a mold. The weddings, the White Cloaks, these were enough to say Rand had been here, for anyone who knew to listen.
Perrin drew a long breath.
And this is what we'll find everywhere he's been? Light, if there are shadow spawn after him, they can track him as easily as we can.
Perhaps, Moraine said. Perhaps not. No one knows anything about Tavirn as strong as Rand.
For just a moment, she sounded vexed at not knowing.
Arthur Hawkwing was the most strongly Tavirn of whom any writings remain, and Hawkwing was in no way as strong as Rand.
It is said, Lan put in, that there were times when people in the same room with Hawkwing spoke truth when they meant to lie, made decisions when they had not even known they were contemplating. Times when every toss of the dice, every turn of the cards, went his way. But only times.
You mean you don't know, Perrin said. He could leave a trail of weddings and white cloaks gone mad all the way to Tyr.
I mean I know as much as there is to know, Moraine said sharply. Her dark-eyed gaze chastised Perrin like a whip. The pattern weaves finely around Tavirin, and others can follow the shape of those threads if they know where to look. Be careful your tongue does not unravel more than you can know.
In spite of himself, Perrin hunched his shoulders as if she were delivering real blows.
Well, you had better be glad I opened my mouth this time. Simeon knows your Aes Sedai. He wants you to heal his brother Gnome of some sickness. If I hadn't talked to him, he would never have worked up nerve enough to ask. But he might have started talking among his friends.
Lan caught Moraine's eye, and for a moment they stared at one another. The warder had the air about him of a wolf about to leap. Finally, Moraine shook her head.
No, she said.
As you wish. It is your decision. Lan sounded as if he thought she had made the wrong one, but the tension left him. Perrin stared at them.
You were thinking of... Simeon couldn't tell anyone if he were dead, could he?
He will not die by my actions, Moraine said. But I cannot and will not promise that it will always be so. We must find Rand, and I will not fail in that. Is that spoken plainly enough for you?
Caught in her gaze, Perrin could make no answer. She nodded as if his silence were answer enough.
Now take me to Simeon.
The door to Loyal's room stood open, spilling a pool of candlelight into the hall. The two beds inside had been pushed together, and Loyal and Simeon were seated on the edge of one. The chinless man was staring up at Loyal with his mouth open, and an expression of wonder in his face.
Oh, yes, the studding are wonderful, Loyal was saying. There is such peace there, under the great trees. You humans may have your wars and strife, but nothing ever troubles the studding. We tend the trees and live in harmony.
He trailed off when he saw Moraine, with Lan and Perrin behind her. Simeon scrambled to his feet, bowing and backing away until he came up against the far wall.
Good mistress.
Even then he continued bobbing like a toy on a string.
Show me to your brother, Moraine commanded, and I will do what I can. Perrin, you will come too, since this good man spoke to you first.
Lan lifted an eyebrow and she shook her head.
If we all go, we might attract attention. Perrin can give me what protection I need.
Lan nodded reluctantly, then gave Perrin a hard look. See that you do, blacksmith. If any harm befalls her. His cold blue eyes finished the promise. Simeon snatched one of the candles and scurried into the hallway, still bowing so the candlelight made their shadows dance.
This way, good mistress, this way.
Beyond the door at the end of the hall, outside stairs led down to a cramped alleyway between inn and stable. Night shrank the candle to a flickering pinpoint. The half-moon was up in a star-flecked sky, giving more than enough light for Perrin's eyes. He wondered when Moraine would tell Simeon he did not have to keep bowing, but she never did. The Aes Sedai glided along, clutching her skirts to keep them out of the mud, as though the dark passage were a palace hall and she a queen. The air was already cooling. Nights still carried echoes of winter.
This way.
Simeon led them back to a small shed behind the stable and hurriedly unbarred the door.
This way,
Simeon pointed.
There, good mistress, there. My brother Gnome.
The far end of the shed had been barred off with slats of wood, hastily by the rough look of it. A stout iron lock and a hasp held shut a crude door of wooden slats. Behind those bars, a man lay sprawled on his stomach on the straw-covered floor. He was barefoot,
his shirt and breeches ripped as if he had torn at them without knowing how to take them off. There was an odor of unwashed flesh that Perrin thought even Simeon and Moraine must smell. Gnome lifted his head and stared at them silently, without expression. There was nothing at all about him to suggest he was Simeon's brother. He had a chin, for one thing, and he was a big man with heavy shoulders. But that was not what staggered Perrin. Gnome stared at them with burnished, golden eyes.
"He'd been talking crazy almost a year, good mistress, saying he could talk with wolves. And his eyes."
Simeon darted a glance at Perrin.
"Well, he'd talk about it when he'd drunk too much. Everybody laughed at him. Then a month or so ago, he didn't come to town. I went out to see what was the matter, and I found him. Like this."
Cautiously, unwillingly, Perrin reached out toward Gnome as he would have toward a wolf. Running through the woods with the cold wind in his nose. Quick dash for cover, teeth snapping at hamstrings. Taste of blood, rich on the tongue. Kill! Perrin jerked back, as he would have from a fire. Sealed himself off. They were not thoughts at all, really. Just a chaotic jumble of desires and images, part memory, part yearning. But there was more wolf there than anything else. He put a hand to the wall to steady himself. His knees felt weak.
Light, help me.
Moraine put a hand on the lock.
Master Herod has the key, good mistress. I don't know if he'll...
She gave a tug, and the lock sprang open. Simeon gaped at her. She lifted the lock free of the hasp, and the chinless man turned to Perrin.
Is that safe, good master? He's my brother, but he bit Mother Rune when she tried to help, and he killed a cow. With his teeth.
He finished faintly. Moraine, Perrin said, the man is dangerous.
All men are dangerous, she replied in a cool voice. Now be quiet.
She opened the door and went in. Perrin held his breath. At her first step, Gnome's lips peeled back from his teeth and he began to growl. A rumble that deepened till his whole body quivered. Moraine ignored it. Still growling, Gnome wriggled backwards in the straw as she came closer to him until he had backed himself into a corner. Or she had backed him. Slowly, calmly, the Aes Sedai knelt and took his head between her hands. Gnome's growl heightened to a snarl, then tailed off in a whimper before Perrin could move. For a long moment, Moraine held Gnome's head, then just as calmly released it and rose. Perrin's throat tightened as she turned her back on Gnome and walked out of the cage, but the man only stared after her. She pushed the slatted door to, slipped the lock back through the hasp, not bothering to snap it shut. And Gnome hurled himself snarling against the wooden bars. He bit at them and battered them with his shoulders, trying to force his head between them, all the while snarling and snapping. Moraine brushed straw from her skirt with a steady hand and no expression.
You do take chances, Perrin breathed.
She looked at him, a steady, knowing gaze, and he dropped his eyes. His yellow eyes. Simeon was staring at his brother.
Can you help him, good mistress?
He asked hoarsely.
I am sorry, Simeon, she said.
Can't you do anything, good mistress? Something? One of those...
His voice fell to a whisper.
Aes Sedai things.
Healing is not a simple matter, Simeon, and it comes from within as much as from the healer. There is nothing here that remembers being Gnome, nothing that remembers being a man. There are no maps remaining to show him the path back, and nothing left to take that path. Gnome is gone, Simeon.
He just used to talk funny, good mistress. When he'd had too much to drink, he just...
Simeon scrubbed a hand across his eyes and blinked.
Thank you, good mistress. I know you'd have done something if you could.
She put a hand on his shoulder, murmured comforting words, and then she was gone from the shed. Perrin knew he should follow her, but the man, what had once been a man, snapping at the wooden bars, held him. He took a quick step and surprised himself by removing the dangling lock from the hasp. The lock was a good one, the work of a master smith.
Good master?
Perrin stared at the lock in his hand, at the man behind in the cage. Gnome had stopped biting at the slats. He stared back at Perrin warily, panting. Some of his teeth had broken off jaggedly. "You can leave him in here forever," Perrin said. "But I don't think he'll ever get any better."
"If he gets out, good master, he'll die."
"He will die in here or out there, Simeon. Out there, at least, he'll be free and as happy as he can be. He is not your brother anymore, but you're the one who has to decide. You can leave him in here for people to stare at, leave him to stare at the bars of his cage until he pines away. You cannot cage a wolf, Simeon, not and expect it to be happy, or live long."
"Yes," Simeon said slowly. "Yes, I see."
He hesitated, then nodded and jerked his head toward the shed door. That was all the answer Perrin needed. He swung back the slatted door and stood aside. For a moment, Gnome stared at the opening. Abruptly, he darted out of the cage, running on all fours, but with surprising agility. Out of the cage, out of the shed, and into the night.
"The light help us both," Perrin thought. "I suppose it's better for him to be free."
Simeon gave himself a shake.
"But I don't know what Master Herod will say when he finds that door standing open and Gnome gone."
Perrin shut the cage door. The big lock made a sharp click as he refastened it. Let him puzzle that out. Simeon barked a quick laugh, abruptly cut off.
"He'll make something out of it. They all will. Some of them say Gnome turned into a wolf, fur and all, when he bit Mother Oon. It's not true, but they say it."
Shivering, Perrin leaned his head against the cage door.
"He may not have fur, but he is a wolf. He is a wolf, not a man. Light help me."
"We didn't keep him here always," Simeon said suddenly. "He was at Mother Rune's house, but she and I got Master Herod to move him here after the White Cloaks came. They always have a list of names. Dark friends they're looking for. It was Gnome's eyes, you see. One of the names the White Cloaks had was a fellow named Perrin Ebarra, a blacksmith. They said he has yellow eyes and runs with wolves. You see why I didn't want them to know about Gnome."
Perrin turned his head enough to look at Simeon over his shoulder. "Do you think this Perrin Ebarra is a dark friend?"
"A dark friend wouldn't care if my brother died in a cage. I suppose she found you soon after it happened, in time to help. I wish she'd come to Jara a few months ago."
Perrin was ashamed that he had ever compared the man to a frog.
"And I wish she could have done something for him. Burn me, I wish she could."
Suddenly it burst on him that the whole village must know about Gnome, about his eyes.
"Simeon, would you bring me something to eat in my room?"
Master Herod and the rest might have been too taken with staring at Loyal to notice his eyes before, but they surely would if he ate in the common room.
"Of course, and in the morning too. You don't have to come down until you're ready to get on your horse."
"You are a good man, Simeon. A good man."
Simeon looked so pleased that Perrin felt ashamed all over again.